Welcome to Heavy Networking, the flagship podcast from the Packet Pushers. I am your co-host, Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conray Murray. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Blue Sky, and the Packet Pushers community Slack group, and please do. On today's episode, artificial intelligence with sponsor Selector.ai. Now, if you're curious and maybe you're still skeptical about the value AI is bringing to network operations, this is an episode you should listen to. Selector is on the forefront of AI ops for networking, building models that are customized and specifically targeted at networks. What Selector is doing, it's not simply the low-hanging AI fruit of throwing documentation into a model so you can ask natural language questions and get a procedure back. Selector is going hard into the data your network generates, finding connections and surfacing information that makes you better at your job. John Capobianco is our guest today. John's been on Heavy Networking before, and I think of John as a bit of a mad scientist with network automation and lately AI, writing code, building tools, and thinking hard about how to get useful information out of the network in novel ways. And John recently joined Selector because he saw their approach to AI, that of a network language model, as a thing he wanted to be part of. So John, welcome back to Heavy Networking. And man, it's good to see your smiling face again. And could you jump into this idea of Selector's network language model? Because it's the distinguishing thing you guys told us about in the prep call for this show. So, okay, what is it? Is it like a large language model or is it something else?
Yeah, no, that's great. And you've teed everything up so perfectly, Ethan. And I'm so glad to be back on a return visit to Packet Pushers on this real journey from networks to network automation to now AI. So at the heart of it, there is a large language model. You've asked, is it a large language model? Except it's been fine-tuned. Okay, so think of this as mutating an existing model. In our case, it's the Llama 3 model, moving up to Llama 3.1, 3.2, keeping up with that model's evolution. This is Meta's open source model. And there are techniques known as fine-tuning that let you, let's call it, inject domain-specific knowledge into the large language model. Now, that's a key point because we can take all that telemetry, all that SNMP, all that syslog, all of those alerts, API JSON, unstructured data, structured data, all that massive amounts of data. AI is really, really good at working with that large amount of data from a machine learning perspective to normalize it and to correlate it and to graph it and present it in a way that we can interact with it standardized. But also we can take that data and use it as the source data to fine-tune an existing large language model. Now, I call this a network language model because it truly has been trained on your network data and the machine learning outcomes. So, and actually Selector has an inner layer of fine-tuning, let's say, as in Selector, the select statement from SQL. That's where the name of the organization comes from. So we actually do a layer of fine-tuning that changes SQL into natural language. So a user can just ask, how is the Wi-Fi in New York? And that actually turns into a fairly complex SQL query under the hood that then goes against that fine-tuned network language model that's specific to your organization. So what I think is kind of neat is that we can actually combine fine-tuning, and what Selector is doing is an approach called RAFT, retrieval augmented fine-tuning. So you've heard about RAG and retrieval augmented generation. That technique in itself is incredible, but you can compound that and use the vectors and use the true source of truth as a way to provide data sets that then can fine tune the Llama 3 model.
Okay, so you said a lot and I want to try to parse some of this out. So we're starting with a large language model. You said Llama, I think 3.1, 3.2, and you'll increment as that increments. And that's to give this, what you're doing, sort of a foundation of English language and English language context to have that natural language capability, yes?
Exactly. So the core root of this, think of it as concentric rings, if you will. So the core of it is going to be the Llama 3 large language model, billions of parameters, trained on natural human English and human text.
Okay. And then we're adding to that so domain specific information, which is network data. So you mentioned SNMP, you mentioned APIs, you mentioned syslog, structured and unstructured data. That's also being fed into the model?
That's correct. So we can take all of that data that we collect from the network and from different points and endpoints and even applications and use it as a source. So the retrieval augmented generation, think of that, storing all that data in a vector store and then being able to retrieve against that data. Mm-hmm. We can then use that to generate the data sets to fine tune the model. So we're going to add an outer band around the natural language model of domain specific enterprise network and system information. So in its normal training, an LLM like Llama is already going to know quite a bit about networks, right? Without any fine tuning, they know incredible amounts, subnetting, BGP, OSPF, port numbers, access control lists, different vendor syntax even.
And that's because just the general model has scooped up that stuff as it sort of swims through the internet like a whale ingesting krill.
That's right. It already has a certain level, but we want to fine tune it with the domain specific information. I think a good analogy is an open book versus a closed book exam. An LLM is going to train itself like a brain on and billions of internet text and other sources, but it has a knowledge cutoff date, and it only knows what it knows, right? Like it only knows what it's been trained on. Well, with retrieval augmented generation and with fine tuning, you can sort of turn it into an open book exam. So when I ask how is Wi-Fi in New York, how is an LLM going to answer that without fine tuning, without domain specific information? It's going to hallucinate. It might make a guess. It might be right. It might be wrong. It might be wildly incoherent. But if we can fine tune the model with information about Wi-Fi in New York, now the LLM has an open book external ability to reach into the data to augment the generation of the output, hence retrieval augmented generation, right?
So is there kind of, since it has to do this fine tuning, meaning it has to go and find new information, is there a lag or delay in the information I might get back from this model when I ask how is the Wi-Fi in New York?
Well, it can be, it's continuously fine tuning itself. And the user gets to select the increments of time. So yes, there could be some lag. We recommend anywhere between a 5 and a 15 minute training cycle. You don't want to be trained, you need it to finish its completion before you start the next training cycle. So there is some consideration there, but it is as close to real time as the training allows it, right?
Okay. So, but we're not talking like a 24, 48 hour delay. It's a reasonable time frame.
Within a reasonable window of, I would say, 5 to 15 minutes.
John, everything you're describing sounds like it's here today and it's real. So just to be perfectly clear, this is all active technology. I can buy this today and it works, yeah?
That's correct. We have many large ISPs. We have companies in industry, manufacturing, media, entertainment, healthcare. It's actually starting to take hold and the demand is quite incredible. I was just at ONUG. I was just at ITMK in Switzerland. And the most difficult part of my role is really convincing people that this is an actual thing that exists right now that you could put into your network and start interfacing with natural language. I would say bidirectionally, meaning you can ask the questions in natural language, but it's also going to drive smart alerts to you in natural language. Nothing cryptic about this, no templates to make. It can take that alert and correlate it to a root cause and send you a single alert instead of the 500 messages of everything we used to get, right? So that is really what drew me to this, was this idea of a network language model that has a natural language interface and all of the dramatic and drastic implications that has. It's democratic. I've seen people from a CX level, CXO level use it, all the way down to CCIEs, all the way to junior engineers. It really is a sliding scale. because that's what the natural language models have been trained on. It knows how to adjust its syntax, so to speak, and it's how it explains things, the level of depth, the focus of the conversation. It really is a democratic, democratizing force.
So easy, even your CTO could use it.
Anybody, right?
Nice joke. So, John, does that slot this into the constellation of networking tools that we have out there? Is this a troubleshooting tool? Is it like a network management system? You said a lot of things that make me think it's kind of all of those things.
Yeah, what I think is really exciting is that we're positioning ourselves as an augmentation. And I feel that there's a little bit of concern about AI being a displacer and going to, you know, eliminate jobs. I have a much more utopian outcome that AI is going to augment our jobs and augment us as human beings, just like every other tool we've had since the lever in the Stone Age, right? So what I think is neat is that we can augment your SolarWinds, your Splunk, your existing stack. We're not saying we're going to save you all these tools and we're going to replace all these things. Maybe over time, there might be some natural decay and natural opportunities to sunset older technologies as people move to our platform. But yes, it's monitoring, it's observability, but with that augmentation of machine learning and artificial intelligence. So I've even seen, you know, a user wants to know why their application feels slow, right? Which involves getting into things like memory in the host, right? So as opposed to troubleshooting the network for hours, it actually will surface that the host is low on memory. And to go into this node and this stack and up the memory, and your latency issue will go away. It has the insights that normally would take, you know, this whole idea of a war room or a digital war rooms after the pandemic, where you're in your instant messenger tool of choice with 15 other subject matter experts trying to pinpoint some issue. This has the ability, this being machine learning and artificial intelligence, to take siloed data from across the stack, from the bottom of the network all the way to the application layer, and draw connections and make correlations because of its natural ability to cluster things. So that's really what we do as humans, right? Is we try to take in as much data as we can and eliminate, kind of sort it into what's good and what's bad, and try to focus more on what's bad and throw away what's good to hopefully then make some connections between the syslog alert I got and the 200 calls the help desk is receiving, right? Like, that is what it actually is extremely capable of doing beyond any individual or even team of people's capability in this day and age, where there's 6 or 7 devices per user, each running 100 different apps, right? In different clouds, in different data centers, hosted by different technologies, right?
Well, I'll give you an example that I think I've given before on this podcast, but I distinctly remember a problem we were facing as a financial payments gateway, where sporadically payments would not process for a certain high profile customer. And it ended up being kind of escalated to, it's like, okay, now there's 6 or 8 or 10 of us on a call banging our heads together, trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Cause everything, it's like, it must be the network. It must be the load balancer. It must be the firewall. It must be this. It must be that.
Right.
Long story short, it was maximum connections were not set high enough on the server. Occasionally when that customer would hit us, cause they'd hit us with a lot of volume, we'd max out the number of connections. Anything exceeding that connection count would get propped. The server couldn't handle them. It was a simple problem to solve once we knew that, oh, we just got to pick up, add more connections, and off we went.
You've just nailed it. And that is, I think every one of us has a story like what you're saying. And I think people listening to this are going to connect this to their, oh my goodness, it was just this little thing. But I would argue that in our field, the 97, maybe 98% of the effort is in identifying the root cause. It's not in fixing the root cause. Like you said, what did you have to do? We upped the connections. It took a second for someone to toggle the nerd knob, right?
Yeah.
Or some optic fails. Well, I replace the optic, or I need to call my ISP for something, or I need to roll back a configuration that someone made. Like it's very obvious what the fix is once you've identified that root cause. And I think that is really the game changer of this idea of a network language model that can basically cluster things and then correlate the root cause, right? So if an optic goes down, you're going to get likely BGP errors, likely OSPF errors or ISIS errors, likely some interface errors, but you're going to get hit with it all at once, right? The AI is actually going to say, here, this optic failed and it actually caused these 50 sub events. You don't have to worry about those. You need to replace the optic. Well, that just cut down potentially hours and hours and millions of dollars. If that's if that's a service provider facing link that you're troubleshooting on end, right? So what I think is neat is that it's actually here for infrastructure around the same time as it arriving for application developers, right? Things like Agile, things like DevOps, they started in the early 2000s and we're still talking about getting network automation to be adopted in net DevOps and infrastructure as code. Mm-hmm. It's taken a long time for infrastructure to catch up to that wave that made software development so successful. Well, now we actually have a co-pilot for your network, much like application developers have a co-pilot in their VS Code to help them write code, right? It's actually here for infrastructure to troubleshoot, to verify configs, to identify root cause, to remediate root cause. Some of the digital twin predictive nature, that optic's going to overheat in 18 days based on the ramp up we see and the correlations that we can make, right?
So we talked a little bit about the construction of what Selector AI is doing. There's the Llama model. There's network data, which is coming from the customer. We'll get into that in a minute. You also mentioned there's a SQL component, and I'm curious if you can drill into that a little bit more, why SQL and what it's doing under the hood.
So that is where the founders really thought early, before when they were still at Juniper, this idea of bringing network to SQL. I myself did a whole bunch of network as search with Elastic. So I think it's a good fit if you can normalize that data. So with the advancements in machine learning, we can actually take, you know, heterogeneous data and get it actually into SQL structure. But then the problem becomes now we need to train network engineers on SQL queries and make them all DBAs, right? That's the challenge. It's not necessarily building good SQL databases with network state or config. It's how you bring up network engineers to now be database administrators, right?
Normalize all of the different kinds of network data and put it in a structure. SQL provided that structure, but instead of forcing folks to become SQL query experts, you sort of hide the SQL element under natural language?
That's correct. So the first band of fine tuning that we do to the Llama model is the SQL to natural language fine tuning.
Okay.
To teach Llama all of the different possible SQL queries that could be used against our data store and how to actually interface them with natural language. So that is the first set of fine tuning on this kind of concentric rings. And then the outer ring is the network data that we then fine tune on top of it. So the network language model has the ability to do natural language to SQL queries, but it also has the ability to provide network state as a retrieval augmented generation source.
All right. So that outer layer, that conceptual outer ring of the model you've described as telemetry, it's network telemetry,
right,
that's being fed to the model. So is that my telemetry alone as a Selector customer, or is that my telemetry and everybody else's telemetry too, kind of augmenting the model?
That's a great point. So every customer gets the first two layers of the fine tuning. So every customer is going to get the Llama 3 core with the SQL concentric ring trained. That outer band is per customer, not shared, not stored. We're not then fine-tuning a master version of the language model or something. Every individual customer has a unique mutated version of their network language model based on their telemetry data and their telemetry data alone. We have the ability to do this in the customer cloud, on-prem, in a cloud we have access to. There are different deployment options based on the use case and scenario and scale. You know, it's a few nodes and some collectors on, you know, in within the organization to build and train and tune the model. But that is not cross-pollinated across enterprises or customers at all. No, it's all fenced in specific, private and secure to the customer.
Right. I might not want the model trained and then my customer uses that, my competitor, I'm sorry, maybe uses that model trained on my data. Maybe that doesn't feel good. That's a thing.
No, it's a good thing to bring up because this is a new frontier and there people have a lot of questions and they're, you know, the number one concern is that they're going to be using ChatGPT in some way and that ChatGPT is going to be learning from my syslogs, from my IP lists, from my proprietary configurations. This is not the case. This is the power of open source and the power of a distributed private model that can be run on GPUs in the cloud or on-prem, but a customer's private version of it, right? And then with that data, we as Selector are not privy to it. It really is their network language model.
That was my next question is if I've got data that I've got to be very careful with, I've got some very specific data governance that I'm required to adhere to. My data doesn't have to go to Selector, the company. You give me the guts of the model, if you will, and then I bring that in-house and make that model my own. Selector never sees my data if I don't want you to.
That's correct. And you can build up your own on-prem. So if it is something that needs to be air-gapped, right, and you're thinking that this won't apply to your enterprise because of your constraints or your security concerns or policy, like I said, it could be an on-prem solution that's air-gapped on your own GPUs with your own. We provide the nodes and the collectors, and that model is going to be fine-tuned for your access and your access only.
Although I would say I just freaked out for a second because I was like, wait a minute, if I got to build this thing in-house, does that mean I need to go to NVIDIA and maybe get another round of funding for my company so I can afford the GPUs to make this model work?
Well, on-prem, like I said, if you do want to host it, you will have to build the hardware solutions. And we do have the paperwork and the SKUs that show how many nodes per scale and what type of hardware you need. But yes, GPUs would be a consideration. You know, the cloud.
GPUs are a consideration, but I don't have to fill a data center with GPUs to pull this off, do I?
No. A moderate footprint for GPUs. Right. No. It would train faster, right, depending on the scale of the GPUs and the resources it had available to it. But no, you do not need a full, you know, row of racks of GPUs or a very complicated system. Again, what you're going to need is the footprint to do inference, because the fine-tuning portion of it, we're not really doing full-blown training of a model. Well, that's where the larger footprint for GPUs on-prem is going to happen. When customers or enterprises want to actually build a model from their data, because we're fine tuning an existing model, the footprint is that much. It's a balancing act, right? Okay. So we can fine tune and create this new network language model from your telemetry data within a reasonable amount of time with a reasonable amount of hardware, because it's kind of a halfway point. We're taking an X billion parameter size model that's already been built and we're fine-tuning it with, you know, comparatively smaller amounts of data.
Millions of parameters that we're fine-tuning with, as opposed to billions or even trillions that might be for the core model, the Llama model.
Right.
Yeah. So John, just to give people a sense of how much of a footprint might be required to do that fine-tuning training with their telemetry, do you know how many cluster members they need, how many CPU cores, that kind of thing, GPU cores?
Yeah, so Selector typically runs on a 3 or 5 member Kubernetes cluster. So it is Kubernetes. That's why we can run it basically anywhere. 32 cores, 256 gigs of RAM per node. If you've got a lot of data, right? 16 cores, 64 gigs of RAM on a single node could be our proof of concept to get started. So, you know, a moderate footprint there. It depends on the use case. I would work backwards from those numbers. You know, a nationwide backbone is going to have a lot more data than a college campus. But I think that you would agree that those are pretty modest numbers.
Yeah, they really are, actually, and kind of sets my, you know, what popped into my head when we started talking about you can train this in-house was NVIDIA with their huge presentation they did earlier this year with that massive array, that rack stacked full with all the cables and everything. And what's it sell for? It's like, if you have to ask what it costs, you can't afford it. I'm sorry. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you also need a small modular nuclear reactor if you want to power it.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Well, and there's a similar video from Tesla where it's just rack after rack after rack after rack, and the rows and rows of huge amounts of cables and compute, right? Unbelievable, the stuff that's coming out.
So you mentioned collectors as well as part of the solution, and I assume those are the things gathering my network data. Can you where are those collectors? What are they collecting? Are they doing any pre-processing before it goes into the training node? How does it all work?
Well, the collectors, so we are, you know, there's a small number of distributed collectors. There's small nodes that will bring in the telemetry and send it into the selector platform. It's a lightweight footprint. We're not talking about agents across all of your desktops or anything like that. It's a few number of collectors internally that will collect the SNMP, the syslog, GNMI, other telemetry, and normalize it with what we call a data hypervisor. So similar to a hypervisor that you know kind of abstracts the hardware, we are going to take that heterogeneous data that we collect and normalize it into JSON.
And you mentioned SNMP, syslog. Can you do flows? Can you do what? Can you get streaming telemetry? Say, like, I'm thinking Arista, the way they can stream telemetry right off the switch.
Yes, we can basically work with you to ingest, you know, any type of data flow at all. It could even be REST API data. Mm-hmm. But yes, we pride ourselves in the number of data sources that we can ingest.
Well, John, let's take this conceptual tool here. We've been talking kind of how it works, what it does, and in a broad sense. Boots on the ground, give me some use cases. What can I do with this thing?
Sure. So I love the natural language examples, right? So, you know, how is the Wi-Fi in New York? One thing that I really find appealing about the selector dashboard. So we really are going to try to take care of a single pane of glass. I know you've heard this before, but truly we are a layer above all of your other dashboards and all of your other points of entry. So we have an open canvas and we can build dynamic dashboards. So when I ask, you know, show me the latency on all my WAN connections, we will build a graph inside of the window that then you can populate and start to build a dynamic dashboard that then you can drill down and explore. Conversely, it really is the smart alerting. So you're going to integrate this with your Slack, your Teams, your Zoom, your whatever platform of choice. And we're going to drive smart alerts that have all of the correlations and identify the root cause. There's hyperlinks from these messages. So it's a bi-directional flow. You can simply query, but it really is going to do the correlation and identify root cause. Now, what's interesting is we're actually going to visualize to prove the alert, right? So to speak, in case you want to drill down and understand the event in its significance and in its totality. So we do have the ability to show you these network graphs. So it's a graph flow using the retrieval augmented generation that will have the root cause at the root of the tree, and then all of the subsequent linked events after that main event happened. So it's going to put it into chronological order for you, what the root cause was, subsequent affected services or protocols, and visualize that for you. So
the classic network alert is up, down, red, green kind of alert.
Right.
So it sounds like if I get that sort of an alert from Selector, it's going to be this is up or this is down with a bunch of metadata around it that explains to me what the heck just happened here.
Well, exactly. And maybe I should have mentioned this a lot earlier, but not only are we going to be collecting from collectors, we are actually going to actually connect into your CMDB, your NetBox, your NottoBot, your Excel spreadsheet, your metadata. So that way it would actually link those IP addresses or those MAC addresses or whatever BGP identifiers to geolocations. So we actually do visualization on over top of maps, over top of the planet, to show you the connections between New York and Denver or whatever. And in terms of the red, green, the machine learning is actually very good at spotting trends. So we actually have a lot less false positives because of the machine learning aspect of this. We know that there's a spike on Monday morning on traffic. We know there's a Friday night backup, right? The seasonality of the network is part of this fine tuning now and part of this machine learning. So the alerts that you get are not typically noise. Here's the alert. By the way, because of this optic failure, you've lost Boston, New York, Denver, whatever, right? So real metadata, but in a natural language that you can continue the conversation with. I don't want that point to be lost. It's not just a one-way smart alert. I can then interrogate that alert further. What time did this happen? Are there any configuration changes near this event? I can further the conversation with this copilot. That's it really is a network copilot that I can include. And then from there, because it's all in Slack, I can invite other people into that room. We have the AI copilot as part of the actual conversation, interrogating and trying to come up with a solution. But like we said, 97% of the effort usually is in identifying the root cause. Well, now I've actually been given a root cause that is actionable. I can just take action. So that's what I want to maybe stress to the network engineers of the world. I've used dozens of platforms in my career, right? And the promise was always, hopefully the alert I get is something I can do something with and take action with. Otherwise, you end up muting it, making mailbox rules, right? We just filter out all this noise.
But
give me something I can do right?
I've built these systems to help with root cause analysis with RCA. And usually the methodology is you're building a dependency tree. That is, you are educating the platform to understand because you've got them in a stack, and you can basically you build out the network graph yourself in some way. And so you're teaching the thing. I mean, it doesn't have any intelligence, but it just kind of knows the way you've laid things out, either hierarchically or in a network graph layout sort of a way, that if this goes down, these other things are going to be affected in some way. But something I want to make sure I understand here with Selector, the way you guys learn the model, I don't have to do that sort of education or training of the model. It's going to figure those relationships out itself.
Yes, exactly. That's why we can do those proof of concepts with one node and a single use case that a customer wants to solve very quickly, because we're not spending, add another rule, think of another rule, right? And then to your point of building it manually, it holds up until there's another use case. Oh, I didn't think of this situation happening, right? So now I have to update that whole graph with another scenario and another scenario. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what the machine learning algorithms are good at, is doing all of this for us, feed it the data, let it, it is supervised learning, right? This is not unsupervised learning. We at Selector have our own recipes involved here in that machine learning algorithms and in the fine tuning, right? So it is supervised in a way, but you're right, to your point, no, the first couple of days of our POC are not whiteboarding all the scenarios by hand and then mapping those to some set of rules you need to apply to a system, right?
So when I get this up and running, is it just kind of a blank window and it's waiting for me to query it to have it do something? Or is it going to start, as it gets information and starts figuring out my network and how it's running, start feeding information up to me?
I think it's a bit of both. It does start as a blank window, and basically, what do you want to ingest? Okay, I'd like to add an SNMP flow. I'd like to add a syslog. I'd like to add this. But you kind of use a building blocks approach. Mm-hmm. But then, correct, that you're going to need a few minutes to ingest from your collections, give it 5 to 10 minutes to have enough data, and then it's going to start normalizing and doing baselining and log mining of the syslogs that it's going to start receiving and of the telemetry it starts receiving. No, and then you're sort of off to the races. You have the co-pilot learning from your data, spotting the anomalies, identifying root cause, and you want to connect your metadata, your meta stores to this, so your netbox or whatever, so that way you have that enriched data. Mm-hmm.
But I also want to put data in that is higher up in the stack. That is, I don't want to operate this purely as a network silo. And I'm thinking about mean time to innocence sorts of queries that we get in. Developers been challenged by the customers because of poor performance. And they go, right, we didn't do anything. It must be the network, and they fling it over the wall. So to get to MTTI, you need to have data from higher up in the network, or server level kind of information, and
right,
stuff coming in from Nginx or Apache logs, and from your load balancer, and maybe from your application, and even from your database, and be able to pull all of that data in so that selector could then say what root cause is. In other words, the model's only going to be as good as that in that outer ring as the
right
telemetry I'm feeding it, right?
That's absolutely correct. The more sources of data, the better in our case. And like you said, we do want that Nginx flow, that F5 flow, the database flow, the compute flow. We want all of it because it builds a more total picture in that outer ring for inference and for making these network graphs, right? So it's not going to pollute, right? If you suddenly think, well, if I'm going to be starting to monitor API data, JSON data from some API, right? And you might not think it has any connection at all to your network flows. Those natural correlations that the AI can make, it actually is enhancing the data. So the more data that we have, the better it is for us.
Okay, so one more connection to make here, and that is to the world of distributed tracing in massive distributed compute models that are running across Kubernetes. Distributed tracing comes up to help developers figure out what's going on across the stack. Where did this call go? What server did it hit? What process answered it? What were the, et cetera? Really complicated problem, and a bunch of different right. companies in startup space have tackled this, the distributed tracing problem. It feels to me like, John, that the model, given enough telemetry and time to learn, the distributed tracing problem, I don't know if it goes away because it's not exactly solving the same problem set here, but very similar, where I'm going to get to root cause analysis based on information I'm pulling in from a whole bunch of different systems, and I don't have to explain to the model how to correlate that data. It's going to figure it out.
Yeah. No, I think you nailed it. It's, I don't know. I hate to say solve problems, but like you said, for distributed tracing, there's still quite a bit of human effort involved, right? Like that's what we're trying to reduce, is the human effort that's required, and use the augmentation of artificial intelligence and machine learning to handle large amounts of data. Right, to reduce that mean time from innocence from hours to minutes or even seconds in some case, right?
So I've been getting briefings from vendors in the network monitoring observability space for decades, and they all say pretty much the same thing, and have been for decades. Like, we collect your data, we make a baseline, we look for anomalies, we send you an alert. What is different here?
Well, I think it's living up to the promise of 15 or 20 years of that story, right? I think it is actually embracing artificial intelligence and machine learning. Those two are something that people haven't done in the past because it wasn't mature enough. There was no real artificial intelligence. Really, it's only practically about 2 years old since, ChatGPT launched in November of 2022, November 30th. So what I think is different is that the amount of data that we can actually absorb with artificial intelligence, with a modern network language model, it is the equivalent of, right, it's a force multiplier. I don't know if it's 25 more people or 50 more people or like five super experts on your team. It really is like having a new member of your network operations team or application or database or whatever telemetry you're pointing at it, you have this new team member that doesn't get tired, doesn't really make mistakes, doesn't need vacations, speaks to you in a language you can understand. I don't need to learn any specific new query language. I don't have to learn the database of the day's flavor, right? There's so much for network engineers to have to do, even just in the sphere of networking. And then if they start to do automation, now they can start to use artificial intelligence. I think it's just a natural progression from DevOps to NetDevOps to AI ops. But yes, it is the same story that we're going to collect all your data, baseline your data, find anomalies, and give you smart alerts. I don't think the story has changed. I think the foundation of the technology that the story is riding on top of has dramatically changed. I think we are doing revolutionary things in comparison to some of the, let's call them legacy at this point, operational tools.
I guess I was trying to find out if there was a way you could elucidate sort of what machine learning is doing differently than sort of the, I guess, traditional method of, you know, we build the baseline and then we alert you about a deviation.
Right. Well, sometimes problems, I think of how many underlying problems there are on networks today that are going unnoticed simply because of a lack of ability to absorb that much data. Right. Mm-hmm. One single router or one single switch generates a lot of telemetry and a lot of data. And I don't know that some graph on another glass of pain is really helping solve the problem. Like, we are approaching things differently in that you can literally just have a conversation with the network technology in the form of human language. I think that in itself is like the addition of the mouse, right? It's a new peripheral. It's a whole new way to interface with technology as a whole, just to be able to say, you know, is there a problem on my WAN link between New York and Chicago? And just let the machine literally take it from there.
There's a predictive nature to what's going on here. That is, you know, anticipating the answer to a question in a language model context. And so I think going back to Drew's question, what's different is the math involved is different. The math that's being done to generate the model and the data that comes out of that model is distinct from say statistical analysis. And it's also the way the answers are generated is distinct from endless if then else's stacked as logic and code. Would you agree with that, John? Am I on the right track here?
Oh, I think you're totally correct. The advancements in even just the GPU, the power of these processors that we have access to, it has really opened up an entire new realm of the possible, right? Mm-hmm. To predictive natures, digital twins, being able to replay network events, hopefully someday being able to ask it, what would happen if I added this route, right? Going beyond just a predictive nature of some optics going to overheat, being mm-hmm. able to ask it questions about impact with proposed changes, which we're on the path towards. I think that the ability for us to apply ourselves to what matters and what really counts is important. I think the more of the tedium, the more of the repeatable things, the more of having to memorize commands and the CLI, like I just think that we can do better. And we are very specialized human beings in this networking world. We understand these systems better than anyone, and we've largely built them ourselves. It's fun now to have someone that we can speak to that understands our language and mm-hmm. understands the language of your network that you've built as you've built it, right? Like, I don't want to dismiss this idea that, you know, this fine-tuning of the network model actually creates a co-pilot based on your exact topology, protocols, IP addresses, geolocations, metadata. And it's astounding to just chat with something you've built.
Okay, you mentioned use cases. You mentioned something along the lines of use cases being kind of open. So is that the right way to think about the Selector AI model? Is it a general purpose model, or is it highly trained just for a specific use case I come up with it in my network?
No, I think it is. It's somewhere in between. We're not going to, let's say, rewrite the way we tune the model based on a use case necessarily. The model stands up on its own for general purpose use cases. Mm-hmm. We do like to start with the use case. So when we interface with new customers, and when we're trying to get to know customers and trying to get to know the world, we are really a use case driven problem solving approach. So let's start with a single use case with a proof of concept. What is your pain point? What are you struggling with? Right? What is it that you'd like to solve with our platform? And then we can work with you to implement the solution to hopefully solve that single problem. But we're confident in that approach because there are going to be more problems, right? Everyone has more than just one single problem they're trying to solve. Yeah. But if we can help them solve that first single problem, I think they will see the natural opportunity to hopefully solve many problems. And again, it's not just limited to some interface has gone down and you're going to get an alert that says the interface has gone down, right? It's actually going to be able to take all of the data that it has and all of the connections that it made and give you the impact assessment of that outage, right? It's going to be able to make your tickets in your ticketing system for you, right? Things that you might not think of that are time wasters or tedium, right? Waking up to a smart alert and the ticket's already been created, and possibly we've already implemented a closed loop solution by running an Ansible playbook or by running some Terraform code or a Python script. Like the possibilities there don't stop with just the smart alert. We could actually kick off closed loop automation to implement remediation steps that the natural network language model will help guide you towards, right?
Okay, so you anticipated my question. We've been talking about it can alert you to a problem, but it sounds like maybe Selector AI can't fix it itself, but if I've got automations or processes that can be kicked off automatically, I can work with Selector to do that, to kick those.
Yeah, exactly. We want to try to close the loop. And if you have, and it could even, so it will suggest solutions to problems, right? The root cause has been identified, and based on our analysis, here's our suggested fix, or here's the configuration change that someone made that introduced this problem. I think those are some low-hanging fruit to roll back a configuration change with approval automatically, mm-hmm. right? If I hit a threshold in the number of incidents that are created from a configuration change, roll it back, or run some customer written or collaborative Ansible or PyTS or whatever it is, right? But yes, mm-hmm. it doesn't stop at the smart alert. We can do closed loop automation. And again, the smart alert is an open-ended conversation that doesn't end with just the alert. You can start to interrogate the specific situation.
That's really interesting.
We've talked a lot about ingesting data into the model. You're talking, John, about how it's pretty easy for you guys to pull in lots of different sorts of data from a lot of different sort of sources. Okay. However, even with that capability, do I, as a customer, need to have a data scientist on staff to make the most of this platform?
So that's great. I sort of tease some of our staff that we are data scientists as a service, right? So that really is part of the engagement with Selector, is that, right, it's not a professional services angle. We're not going to upsell you on professional services. We're going to get data scientists to connect with you very early in the process to help with that fine-tuning aspect and understand the data that's coming in, particularly if it's data that is unique to the customer, or right, a system that only they have that format of data in. We will provide the data scientists as a service, more or less, throughout the engagement and throughout the totality of the solution. So that's not something that you need to have. If you are an IT operational shop and you want to augment your staff with AI and are interested in the solution, it's not like you need to have any special skills or special AI knowledge or machine learning experience on staff. No, we'll take care of all of that.
Well, John, I think I'm getting why you're enthusiastic about this. I mean, I remember before you ever went into working in vendor land, you were experimenting with all kinds of network automation stuff and just making code do things that were interesting. And you open sourced a bunch of tools and stuff and then got into AI on your own, and now you're at Selector. Your journey's been fun. I totally get, now that you've told this story about Selector, why you're there. It makes sense to me. And I, from what you guys told us, you've got a bunch of customers that are super enthusiastic as well. Series B funding has been or is going to be announced very soon.
Yes, there's a big announcement about Series B funding. We have a tremendous amount of interest, a tremendous amount of success, I would say, with our existing customers. It's an exciting time to get in at the ground floor and then see the growth, probably 25, 30 new employees since I've joined. And it's because of demand. And I think it really speaks to the fact that we're actually solving problems with artificial intelligence. We're actually helping organizations as best we can, given the fact that it is new and it is a bit of a trailblazing approach, right? It's difficult to be first in many ways, right? And I think Selector has been first in many different ways and many different technologies. So the Series B is only going to, further fuel our growth and our capabilities and the things we're going to offer in the platform.
Another thing you mentioned along the way was Packet Copilot, that there's a Copilot style feature here as part of Selector AI. And you've got some news around Packet Copilot as well.
Yeah, so we really wanted to make a community tool, a tool that uses artificial intelligence to help network engineers in a way for free. So on our selector.ai website, in the next, hopefully by the time that this launches, there's going to be a Packet Copilot that lets you upload PCAPs that you would normally, open with Wireshark, and you can chat with them with natural language. So as an example, if you had a, four-frame PCAP of a DHCP conversation, you could upload it and say, can you help me understand this packet capture? And it will break it down that this is a DHCP, request and acknowledgement, and here's the source IP and destination IP. Now that's just one example, but I want people to start really thinking about what would you ask of your packets if you could, right? So we're hoping that this encourages everyone on the spectrum, from people just entering the field who maybe are just starting to work with packet captures, to the most experienced and seasoned veterans, to get real expertise type questions with packet captures. So you'll just be able to upload your PCAP and ask it questions.
Now, if memory serves me, John, you had a tool like this of your very own. Is this an iteration of that, or just basically an expansion of the idea but fresh code?
Yeah, so it's an expansion of the idea with a new take. I'm still offering the Packet Buddy as an open source tool that people can download, right? So it is still on my GitHub, and it was very successful. It actually drew Kanan, the CEO of Selector's, attention to me. He had seen the packet stuff, and his vision of, right from before I even joined, was that I was going to join and be an evangelist, and that we were going to host this tool for the community because of its power and its ease of use. And it's just an exciting, use of artificial intelligence to actually be able to do retrieval augmented generation with packet captures.
I think it's a very interesting tool. Another new Packet Pushers podcast is N is for Networking, which is aimed at people who are just getting started, right? College students, people brand new to the field, they're trying to get their heads around the fundamentals, Ethernet and IP and just the basics. To be able to upload a PCAP and begin asking plain language questions about it could really help some people out in that situation as well. So I think it's a great tool. Packet Copilot, again, this is coming out on November 15th, 2024. That should be available. Packet Copilot should be available from selector.ai by the time you read this. Well, John, thank you for being on Heavy Networking today. And for those of you listening out there, thanks to you for listening. If you want to find out more from Selector, selector.ai/packetpushers. And all the information that you're looking for should be there. It's actually not there right this second as we're recording this, but by the time you hear this, you should be able to go to selector.ai/packetpushers and find out all kinds of additional information. Thank you to Selector for sponsoring today's episode. And by the way, if you do go hit that landing page and find out more information about Selector, would you let them know that you heard about them on Packet Pushers? We would really appreciate that. A couple of quick housekeeping notes. We have a merch store now. Yes, if you would like a Packet Pushers t-shirt, a mug, a hat, go to store.packetpushers.net. We've got merch with just Packet Pushers branding on it, as well as branding from your favorite podcasts like this one, Heavy Networking, all from our network of 12 different podcasts for your professional career development. And we've kept the prices pretty low. We make a few bucks on the merch, but we really did try to keep it cheap. And as far as we can tell, our store provider ships to most places in the world. But if they tell you no, they don't ship to wherever you are, would you make us aware of that? For anything you'd like to tell us about this episode or the merch store or whatever else, you can visit packetpushers.net/followup and send us a message. And you don't have to leave an email if you don't want to. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.